going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about pro wrestling. And obviously, the big topic right now is WrestleMania 41. So, Leonard and I both watched this event. So, we decided we would recap it and review it for you here. And let's just get the background out of the way for those who might not know some of the details about WrestleMania 41. It was held at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada, where the Raiders play April 19th and 20th. The attendance that's listed on Wikipedia is slightly different than what they announced at the show. Night one is listed as 57,037. Night two is listed as 60,343. For a combined total of 117,380. They announced slightly different totals there. WWE's always had their own way of giving attendance numbers.
Yeah, my question would be, are they counting giveaway tickets? And are they counting like every physical person in the building?
Right. I think that's what usually WWE does. So if you were watching any of this content, you know that there was a lot. Like, let's just start there. I mean, I have, and I'm going to put it up on the screen. There was a lineup of content listed, and there was so much to get through. Like, if you even if you just start with SmackDown that was on the preceding Friday, then after SmackDown at 1 a.m. was when the Hall of Fame got started. So, and like, this is just, in addition to the wrestling, obviously before that you have Raw and NXT, but then you have all the other content that WWE does, like the Rivals show and the WrestleMania 9 documentary, which we could probably do a whole episode about if we really want to. But yeah, so then you get the Hall of Fame at 1 a.m. and the next day you have NXT Stand and Deliver, which this is probably the first year I didn't really watch any of that because, if I'm being honest, there's really not a lot in NXT that, catches my eye.
Yeah, I did not watch any of that. I knew I'd be lost on it.
Right. And so night one would start at 7 p.m. But one thing, Leonard, that happened the night before WrestleMania 41, something that I feel like it was probably mentioned once or twice, but really nobody cares or is talking about, and that is the winner of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
I didn't even know that happened.
Right. Neither did I until I just got on here getting my notes ready, and it was won by Carmelo Hayes.
Wow, there's no one who's ever won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal has done anything afterward,
That
correct?
is unfortunately correct.
Yeah, like you just fall off the table after having won that.
Yes, absolutely. So let's get some of the celebrity involvement out of the way here, because I tend to, in these recaps of WrestleMania in the past, I would skip some of that. UFC President Dana White narrated the cold open for night one, while Jelly Roll performed God Bless America to kick off night one. And I would say, Leonard, that this WrestleMania, night one and night two, should be known as the WrestleMania of advertisements, because there
Yes, every
was
match
lots.
I think had a sponsor. They were changing the ring aprons and the image graphics around the ring with every different match. I mean, other sports have it. I mean, NASCAR is a prime example of everything having a sponsor to it. So, yeah, I mean, it didn't bother me. I don't think it distracted too much. It wasn't like the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match from the Royal Rumble that time when everything was like black and green.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, by the way, I want to say this right now, Leonard. I'm going to have you keep a tally on me. I'm going to give myself two AEW comparisons throughout this recap.
Okay, so once you get the two, I gotta call you on it. All
Yeah,
right.
exactly. I got to be cut off. There's Jim Cornette. as Leonard
Yeah,
adjusted.
there's Cornette. I was looking for a pin, but I'll keep track. Keep track in my head.
Jim Cornette was not at WrestleMania, but that's
No, but I wore the shirt because I'm sure I'm going to sound like Jim Cornette as we go through this.
Yeah, we both might in this case. So night one started with the World Heavyweight Championship match. As we remember, Jey Uso won the Royal Rumble, and he was going against the champion, Gunther, 16 minutes and 30 seconds. Jey Uso won by submission, and I have to say that I was surprised that he won via tap out. Like, I would not have guessed that, and I don't know that I would have done that, but, you know, like, one theme you'll also hear throughout this show is that Triple H was doing a lot of damage control in the preceding week leading up to this event. He was doing interviews, and basically, if you kind of look back at those interviews, you know, he was telling people not to be hypercritical about the product, and he was telling people just to sit and enjoy it, and, you know, basically kind of preparing us for the fact that there would be a certain person that wouldn't show up and all this kind of stuff. You know, definitely doing damage control. And the reason I mentioned that and about being hypercritical of the product is, you know, I won't be hypercritical of the finish, even though I don't know that that's what I would have done. This match was okay for what it was. Gunther is certainly capable of better. I don't think Jey Uso will be a long-term champion. I am happy for him because he's worked hard, but I gave this about 3 stars.
I disagree with you. I give it about 4 stars. It was an excellent match, except for the finish, which we'll get to. I think the beginning was good in the fact that it was kind of what you would expect from these guys. Gunther is using his power and his size to dominate Uso, who's getting shine moments through his speed and agility. And then everything changes when he does the belt spot, which was – I have two favorite spots on the night. That's one of them. Where he goes outside and he gets the belt and he goes to leave with it, which he knew would bring the ref over, which he knew would have Jey try to do a suicide dive. And the way that Gunther swings the belt so tight with the way he swings it around. So the even though the ref's opposition, he doesn't see it and he hides it. And then the way that he drops it and he's got to get back in the ring and the ref has to recover, that's enough time for Jey to kick out. So it makes sense that he kicked out of a belt shot like. And then they get into this one upsmanship thing. Like I start doing my signature stuff. It doesn't work. So I'm going to steal your signature stuff. And the one upsmanship back and forth. The problem was the finish. Jey does splashes from 3 corners, looks at the 4th corner like he's tired, and then does the submission.
Right.
Like the 4 corner splashes would have been a great end there. So I don't know if Jey was tired or hurt and called an audible, but yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't have done submission there because Gunther is going to get you tap chance at him. Not that he couldn't ever submit, but that's a character at this point. You don't want to have a submission on him.
Yeah, that's kind of was my theory with the finish. I do agree with you about the belt spot. I thought that was a very cool spot, but we're a little bit different on our ratings, but that's all right. The second match is the New Day of Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods against the War Raiders of Eric and Ivar for the World Tag Team Championship. The War Raiders are the champions. This match went 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Leonard, what'd you think?
You know, this felt like sort of a middle of the show Raw match to me. I know that when we were trading comments back and forth via text of watching the show, and shout out to good friend of the show, Ronnie, who was doing that with us, that I think it was Ronnie said, yeah, the you know, the tag division is just in the crapper. And it should be known this was the only tag match or on the two nights. There's the women's tag match on the second show. So this, I mean, I like that the New Day are heels now. I think that really revitalized their characters. They seem to be having fun again. I'm really impressed with the athleticism of the War Raiders, particularly Ivar. He had a couple spots that popped me. But, yeah, in the end, not every match, and we're going to get to this with the next one, has to be super long, and this wasn't. This was what it needed to be. I think it was fine, and I wouldn't go more than 2 stars on it.
I'm also at 2 stars. I didn't really have anything glowing to say about this. I also like that the New Day are heels. And I think that they could even go harder with it if they really wanted to. I think it would have been cool after the spot, and I forget when it was, maybe a month or maybe a little bit more than a month before, where Big E came out and asked what was going on with them, and they basically kind of shunned him from the group. I think it would have been really neat to have Big E come out and like kind of kiss up to them in some way and also try to go heel. Like, I think they could go harder with it, but you're right in that it does revitalize their characters, certainly. If they're going to try and get everything they can out of the New Day, this is the way to go. The match itself was meh. So the next match, Jade Cargill against Naomi, which had a whole storyline leading up to it involving, car wrecks and all that kind of stuff. This match went 9 minutes and 20 seconds. I gave it 2.25 stars, slightly more than the tag match. I think that Naomi is okay in this role as the heel. Jade Cargill is not a heel right now, but she is a natural heel. And I think that that will eventually come to play, but right now they're obviously pushing Jade Cargill a little bit more. Naomi's been in the company forever. This match was it was what it was. I Jade Cargill is still somewhat limited in what she can do. Naomi is a little bit better than that. So, like I said, not great, but I also don't know if it needed to go 9 minutes. But Leonard, your
Well,
thoughts?
that's my chief thing, and this is where a lot of the issues I have overall with WWE come out. And I would go lower than you. I'd go maybe 1.75 stars. Not every match needs to be 20 minutes. Not every match needs to have a dozen false finishes.
Right.
Not so many matches on the evening, on both evenings, like had a really good finish and kept going past what you should have done. It's okay. You can have this should have been 5 minutes. You can have a 5 minute match. It's okay. I don't remember what the first move was, but I know Cargill had an amazing move that everyone popped for. I think I said to you guys, well, that should be your finish right there. And they kept going. And then she got the electric chair into the power bomb,
Right.
which looked great and got a great pop. And then she goes, oh, I gotta win with my finish. Oh, you
Right.
can't win if you don't do your finish. And then did the jaded, which looked bad after, like I hit you with a truck, and now I'm just going to like smack you with a fly swatter, and that's going to be how I'm going to beat you.
Right.
Like, come on, come on. So that was a lot of the problem I had with that. That was a lot of the problem I was seeing overall, very much exemplified with what they did there. And Jade is super green, and Naomi, for being as veteran as she is, it's not someone that walks you through a match. She does not have the ability to walk someone that green through a match.
Right, I agree. The fourth match. So at this point, I didn't write down any of my predictions, but at this point, I was 3 for 3.
Okay.
Up until this match, I was having a good record. The next match would be LA Knight against Jacob Fatu for the WWE United States Championship, 10 minutes and 40 seconds. Another match that I gave about 3 stars. The work between these two was okay. Nothing to write home about, but it was okay. I didn't think that they were going to take the title off of LA Knight this way or this soon, maybe. I forget how long he's had the belt, but I thought that they were going to try and get a little bit more longevity out of LA Knight in this role because there's a lot of guys vying to move up right now. And so I thought maybe they would have him there a little bit longer. I know they're high on Jacob Fatu. The crowd reacts to him. He has good facial expressions for his size. He's good in the ring. Both these guys, I think, have high points. LA Knight, like, needs to get pushed, I think, sooner.
Older.
He's older. He's, past halftime in his career, I would say. So I gave this match 3 stars. It was fine. I was surprised by the ending, but what'd you think?
I might go the same thing, even though I couldn't really tell you anything that happened in it.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
There was a few matches on the night when, after I watched it, I went, well, wait a minute, what just happened? And it wasn't necessarily they were bad. I just didn't, nothing that memorable. I like both these guys. I definitely think that Fatu at this point has a higher ceiling than Knight because of age. I think this felt a lot like when John Cena beat the Big Show at WrestleMania 20. I think this is the first step on the long path to the guy who they think is the guy.
Yeah.
And I think we all said, and when we were chatting, that this dude's going to main event at WrestleMania within several years. I could definitely see that. So I think this was just a way for Fatu to take his first step on being the guy.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of Samoans there right now, and they're all wanting to get pushed. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens. The next match, El Grande Americano against Rey Fénix. And this match went 7 minutes and 55 seconds. This was supposed to be Rey Mysterio, but I believe he was injured. So they replaced him with Rey Fénix in his first WrestleMania match. I'm sure, you know, not I'm sure, I know, a very big deal for him. I saw a clip after the fact of Penta in regular clothing off to the side, kind of, you know, wiping away the tears because they're brothers in real life. And this was, you know, a big deal for them. So, Leonard, what did you think about this one?
So the start of it, El Grande Americano, or Chad Gable, as we know he is, goes out and gets into it with El Vikingo to get over the fact that WWE has acquired AAA.
Right.
And he hits him and he goes in and he takes a Rana from Rey Fénix, and that should have been the finish. It could be 3 seconds. That's fine. You told a story. And Gable could come back and say, the referee never should have started that match. I was viciously attacked on the outside. How dare he do that? You got heat with Vikingo. You got heat with Rey Fénix. You got heat with Rey Mysterio. That's fine. I would have done that. Now, the match that we got, I thought was fine for what it was. My second favorite spot of the night was the loaded mask, where Rey Fénix kicks the head and hurts his leg. Never seen a loaded mask spot like that. That was brilliant. And then Gable starts to work the leg. The finish should have been the leg submission. He submits to the leg submission. Now, he did get the pin after a diving headbutt with the loaded mask. Yes. But the leg spot was so creative, and getting the submission with that leg spot, that would, I think, have done good for both, because not only does it make Gable look even smarter, but then it gives more sympathy to Rey. Well, you know, how would you even have thought to not do that, you know, kind of thing. So if you're not going to do what, you know, the quick finish, then I would have done the thing with the leg lock. And I don't know, you know, because it was shorter, I might go 2.5 stars, because I really did like the loaded mask spot.
See, I went a little bit higher with this one.
Okay.
For what it was, I went 3.5 stars here.
Oh, that kind of surprised me. It was the length.
Yeah, and like, yeah, it was a shorter match. Chad Gable right now is in the Dolph Ziggler spot of the
game. Yeah.
And you can take that as a bad thing or a good thing. Chad Gable, in my opinion, is very, very good at what he does. I think that he's come a long way in terms of being a character, and he's always been very good in the ring. But man, they just leave him in this middle of the park type of role. And he's gaining some traction in this role because, like, this was after he had lost to a bunch of the luchador wrestlers. So then he decided to put on the mask and be this role. So that's kind of, it's a long storyline, but Chad Gable is capable of a lot, because I think he's proven to do a lot with nothing. So I've, you know, it was cool. It was cool to see this. I wasn't necessarily surprised by the finish, in any event, the next match, for the WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton against Charlotte Flair. Tiffany Stratton being the champion, Charlotte Flair having won the Women's Rumble. This match went 19 minutes and 5 seconds. I thought that it got off to a little bit of a rough start, but I thought that it got pretty good towards the end. This match carries with it some baggage, and the baggage is that the crowd doesn't care about the fact that Charlotte Flair won the Rumble. I don't think that they really wanted her in this spot. And I don't know if this was, I don't think the plan initially was to have Tiffany Stratton retain. Then there was the promo that happened that, you know, they were taking some personal shots at each other.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, kind of made this match a little bit awkward. And so then you have Stratton retaining because, you know, Charlotte Flair is like, you know, I don't know what the right word is, kryptonite right now.
Well, it's X-Pac heat is what usually you say.
Yeah.
Because it's because she was supposed to be positioned as the face and they booed her. And it wasn't like, oh, we don't like you, boo. It was, please get out of here. Why do you exist?
Yeah,
is like the heat that she's getting. And I said to you guys, it's like she's the ultimate warrior. She goes away and comes back. She looks completely different every time.
Yeah.
Every time she comes back, it's less and less. It's diminishing returns every single time.
Yeah, I mean, she's a 15-time champion at this point. And, so, I mean, she could still go in the ring, but,
yeah,
you know, she is just, you know, she's given these spots, and I think the crowd is just kind of tired of it at this point. I like Charlotte Flair, but, you know, I also think that she wears her emotions on her sleeve. And, you know, this has happened with other talent, and especially female talent. When the crowd reacts to them in a way that was not expected, they get flustered. And they tend to show that a little bit. And I think that that was the case a little bit leading up to this match. But there was some stiff shots thrown in this match, Leonard, because Tiffany Stratton had a chipped tooth by the end of this. So there was a little bit of a payback, I would say.
Yeah, my thoughts on this is similar to yours. I thought it was a little awkward to start with. And I think that was maybe nerves. You know, Stratton's only 25, first ever WrestleMania, went in as the champ. All the heat between her and Charlotte. I think Charlotte is still getting her sea legs back, as it were. But once they got in the gear, I really liked the story told because it was more than just the animosity between them, but it was Stratton working the surgically repaired leg, surgically repaired knee, as Michael Cole likes to say, and her attacking the leg, and then Charlotte going, well, you want to attack the leg? Fine, I'll show you how you do it. And then started to attack her leg. This helps up the figure eight. So the leg work between the two and why they were doing it, I thought was a really great part of the story. This is maybe my third favorite match of the two nights. And I don't know if I would go 4 stars, maybe 3.5 to 3/4.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Or a little bit off, but we both generally liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So the main event of night one would be Seth Rollins against CM Punk against Roman Reigns in a triple threat match that went 32 minutes and 55 seconds. Obviously, Paul Heyman walked down to the ring with CM Punk, and Living Color played CM Punk out, which was cool. Those guys have been around forever, but, you know, it was still cool to see them playing. So, Leonard, it is your turn to go first. What'd you think?
This was my favorite match of the two nights. Absolutely loved it. I knew this was going to be good because of the three guys involved. I'm not a huge fan of triple threats. This is one of the best triple threats I think I've ever seen because of the pacing, because of the flow, because of the way they worked each other, the way that they did like the three-person spots and the way they were able to transition to like A plus B, A and C, B and C do something. The one part I didn't maybe like was when it was just Punk and Rollins fighting through the crowd and it was just them. But then the way that Reigns came back in, the way he kind of flew in and tackled both of them, that was great how he re-entered that. Love the powerbomb spot on the tables. I love those new tables because the way they kind of come apart like a Lego set.
Right.
Like you hit him in the middle, it's like pop. I love that look. I love that image. That was great. I said to you guys at one point, it was like Reigns and Rollins went to Punk and say, so what do you want to do tonight? And he said, everything. Because every single spot you could think of, for they were best now stuff they hadn't done in 10, 15 years on each other. But every single spot you could think of, they did.
Right.
And all the near falls worked here. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Everything worked here. And then So you do everything you can do. So what's your finish? So the overbooking with Heyman actually works here because it's the only option you got left. So he comes in, and you knew he was going to turn on Punk, and then he turns on Reigns. And the way he does it, the way he drops to his knees, and it was like, I'm sorry, I have to do this. And then he cans Punk, and then he, crouches Reigns the same way. But I know, you thought the only logical thing was him going with Rollins, which is what we wound up with here at the end. Of those three guys, Rollins was the guy that probably could have used the win the most and is the one that kind of allows things to continue on or positions him for something else. So I love this. I don't think I can go 5 stars, but I would go 4 3/4, maybe 4.5.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I went a little bit lower. I'm between like 3 3/4 and 4 here.
Oh, you're way below me. Okay.
But I liked it. I did like it a lot. It was not my favorite match of the two nights, but I thought that it was very good. And, these guys all worked really well together. You were right about how they worked the triple threat match pretty well. At a match that was north of a half hour, I thought that it flowed really nicely. As far as the ending goes and the turn, I saw that coming because I just thought that was the only logical thing to do, because honestly, I thought the storyline leading up to this match was incredibly lame, and I will die on that hill. Like, two men fighting over the services of another guy, two veteran wrestlers who have already done everything, fighting over this guy's services while this third guy is out here to the side just saying, well, I don't like either of you guys. Like, to me, was like just a little bit lame, but these guys made it work as best they could. And Heyman gets in the ring. It was, if I'm being hypercritical, as Triple H might say, it was a little bit telegraphed. like you knew what was gonna happen. Like, it's like, why is Heyman getting in the ring with Punk?
It's not always the destination, it's the journey.
Right.
Even if you know where you're going, it can be fun to get there. That's why quick side note, like, it's okay to spoil a movie for me. Mm. Like, if someone tells me the ending, that's cool. I want to see how we get there.
Right. Well, it depends on the movie. I feel like we've had this discussion back.
I think we have, and we don't need to have it now. We have a lot to talk about yet.
But yeah, as a main event, this worked. And the aftermath of this is that on Raw, you had CM Punk and Roman Reigns both kind of coming out to get their revenge. And, there were attacks back and forth. Heyman got a Superman punch. And then out of nowhere, apparently the newest member to this small faction, Bron Breakker, is now also aligned with Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins. Which is interesting to me. I like that Heyman is not just with the one guy, that it's somewhat of a elite stable.
Well, so Breakker can be a heater for Rollins.
Yeah.
And Breakker definitely feels like, I think he needs some promo, even though he did the Steiner math promo leading up to WrestleMania, which was perfect. but Breakker feels like a Paul Heyman guy. He really does. So it's a good fit.
Yeah. So that is the end of night one. And let's see, some of the celebrity involvement for night two. We would have pop singer Ava Max sing the Star Spangled Banner to kick off night two. And also Stephanie McMahon kicked off night two, which I should add, Triple H kicked off night one. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the routine. I think that's what happened last year as well. But night two, the first match was my favorite match of the two nights, probably. And that is triple threat for the Women's World Championship. Io Sky against Bianca Belair against Rhea Ripley. 14 minutes and 25 seconds. I gave this one about an even 4 stars. I thought that this was much better than I expected it to be. And this was another match that I would have predicted wrong, because I did not think, and I think that's what they wanted you to think, I did not think Io Sky was going to retain against these two ladies. But she did, and the way they did it to me made sense. I thought the match timing was perfect for these three. It was a tight, well-constructed triple threat match, similar to the fact that the one from the previous night was really well-constructed. As Leonard said, triple threat matches can sometimes come off, very clumsily. But I thought that these two triple threat matches worked. This one I liked a lot. And I think it's interesting that Io Sky is the champion through WrestleMania. That is one thing that kind of has me interested in where they're going with it. Very few things out of this WrestleMania and the night after had me thinking, I want to know what happens next. Mm-hmm. This was one of them. So, Leonard, what did you think?
I didn't like it as well as you did. I think the beginning to me, and this is a problem I have with a lot of women's wrestling, it was a gymnastics routine. It was you do this and I'll do that, and then you do that and then I'll do this. But that got out of it as they went. I really do think they started to tell the story more as they went. The idea was Belair and Ripley thinking, well, this should be you and me, and that sort of mutual respect and how they disrespected Io Sky. She's off here to the side, don't worry about her. And then she steals the win. Great story there. And I think Ripley and Belair, they don't need the belt. I think Sky needs the belt. I think you have a lot of still good storytelling potential here. You have Belair and Ripley both blaming each other and continuing their rivalry. You could have Belair coming after Sky, Ripley coming after Sky. You could have anyone else from underneath coming after her. So I really like the story once they kind of got settled in and started doing what they were doing. And I really like the fact that even for a triple threat, because a triple threat match doesn't mean a hardcore match, but anymore, and Michael Cole always says this, well, it's no DQ and it's no count out and you can do whatever you want. Not necessarily. But I like that they kept this a pretty standard in the ring match because of the way the triple threat the night before was, and because of what we get next after that, this being a street fight, which was going to have plunder. So you don't double up. So great on the road agents for figuring out, oh, you're going to do this? Okay, you can't do that. Then we'll figure it out. So,
right, I agree.
It was good for what it was, given everything around it.
I agree, and I agree Rhea Ripley could have some time without the belt. Bianca Belair probably doesn't need the belt either. But Rhea Ripley for sure, like they had just taken it off her. So I didn't think to myself that they were going to put it right back on her again. Mm-hmm. Just some follow up on the night after.
Well, real quick before we go on, I shared the Vegas odds with you, and this was the biggest upset.
Right.
Belair, it started out that Ripley was the odds in favorite to win. Then the money moved to Belair. And then Sky was, I forget what, I think I told you guys, for a $120 bet, you would have won $100 because I think she was a minus 120.
Right.
So this was the biggest upset, according to Vegas, of the weekend.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. That tracks for sure. The next night, Io Sky would come out on Raw, and she would get confronted by Stephanie Vaquer, who is the NXT Women's Champion. And, they challenged each other and it became a match. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really great. And then I remembered what company we are dealing with. And here is number one, Leonard, because at the end of this match, Roxanne Perez, who is going to challenge Stephanie Vaquer again for the NXT title, came out and interfered. And it was a DQ ending. You know, and I'm sure there are people out there that'll argue, oh, well, you can't beat either one of these people. You have to save, you want to have, make them both look good. Bullshit on that, because if this were AEW, you would have a clean finish and still manage to have both women come out looking well. But on Raw, the just happened, there was a total, by the way, of a half hour of wrestling. A half hour of wrestling on a 3-hour show. That's not related to this discussion, but I just wanted to mention it. So those two were having a very good match on Raw until it kind of got ruined. But anyway, I will move on to the next match.
Okay.
We have Damian Priest against Drew McIntyre in a Sin City street fight. 13 minutes, 55 seconds. Leonard, what'd you think?
It seems like right before they walked out, they said cut 5 minutes because it feels like they jumped to all the weapon stuff immediately. Like they went out of the ring almost immediately. They start pulling out the stairs and the table and the chair, and like everything got introduced maybe quicker than I would have introduced everything. But at the same time, I kind of get where the rivalry's at, and it is a street fight, and You know, they went in with, hey, we're going to do the plunder. That's fine. So I thought this was good for what it was. I really enjoyed the back and forthness of it. I enjoyed a lot of the weapon spots that they did. You know, McIntyre, you know, getting the win. It's fine. I think either guy could have won here. I think maybe Priest maybe needed it a little bit more than Drew did. But I thought this was fine. I'm not a hardcore lover. I don't know where you would go star-wise. It's not bad. Three stars. I'm not against 3 stars on this one.
So I went 3.25, but okay. I'm with you on most things except for who needed the win. Drew McIntyre has done nothing but lose.
All right. And again, I've not been watching week in and week out. Right. It's just more of the impressions that I get and the story, that you know, how the hype video, how it sets everything up, et cetera. So.
Right. And, like, they're very high on Damian Priest. But like I said, Drew McIntyre has done nothing but lose. And I didn't remember that this match is literally a year in the making, because Damian Priest was the one that, you know, cashed in on Drew McIntyre at the previous WrestleMania. So that's how long this has been going on. But I like hardcore matches, and it's one of the things that I think WWE is not doing as much these days. And the reason they're not doing it as much is because I don't think they do it very well anymore. And it's because they're that's the wrong word. They are reaching out to audiences of many ages. So they don't want to do the blood. They don't want to do super hardcore stuff. And you could either like that or not. Personally, I think if you're going to have a street fight, there's got to be a little bit of color. I'm not advocating for color in every match, but this match there wasn't. These guys did okay. I think my biggest problem with the match wasn't the absence of blood, but it was the fact that it just kind of felt very like, okay, Drew McIntyre's going to do his stuff. Now Damian Priest is going to do his stuff. And then here's the end. As you said, like, they might have cut off some time, who knows. So I thought it was okay for what it was. I like Drew McIntyre. It was fine. The next match we have is the Fatal 4-Way for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. Dominic Mysterio against Bron Breakker, who is the champion, against Finn Balor, against Penta. And it's went 10 minutes and 30 seconds. I gave this about 3.5 stars, I thought, for Fatal 4-Way. It was, you know, solid. I kind of expected Dominic Mysterio to win going into this, but if you had asked me who the biggest pop of the night would be, and it would be Dominic Mysterio, at least to me it was him. I don't know that I would have predicted that he would have gotten the biggest pop of the night, but he did. How or why he's drifted from being genuinely disliked to now being, oh, well, we hated you for a while, now we like you, kind of, I don't know how that journey has happened, but because I don't watch every week. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the match itself was fine. I knew that he was going to win, and I even looked over at my daughter and I said, he's going to pin Finn Balor to do it because they're both in the Judgment Day, and that's the obvious storyline. Leonard, what did you think?
I'd go 3.5, too, probably. This may be my favorite match on the second night. Short for a Fatal 4-Way, I think, at 10 minutes, but good flow, good pacing. It was very fast-paced because of that. I liked how all the guys kind of interacted with each other. A 4-Way is a little easier than a triple threat because you can do 2-on-2 and 2-on-2, and then the way you work everyone in. I think this would have been good as a ladder match. I may have made this a ladder match. Again, Dominic win, I think, was the way they were going to go. Over Balor is good. That's what you said. That's what the storyline is. And, yeah, I think it's just the fact that Dominic is maybe so good at being a heel that it kind of goes around the other way, that people are starting to enjoy the act enough that they're popping for the act.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, you might be right about that. The next match. Randy Orton against a mystery opponent. Who is it going to be? It could be so many people that are free agents. It could be Nick Aldis, who he's RKO'd previously. Nope, it is Joe Hendry, the TNA heavyweight champion. And this match went 3 minutes and 10 seconds. Leonard, I will let you give your opinion first.
All right. I think I told you Alpha Air last week, I thought Joe Hendry would be in the running here because of the working relationship with TNA, because of the momentum he's had, everything that they've done with him. I guarantee you someone in the back said, hey, you know what would be funny? Would be if he turns around and does the smug deal from his entrance video, and then he eats the RKO. And someone went, God, that's hilarious. And that's what they did. Because it was funny, and it did make me laugh. But it hurts Joe Hendry. It doesn't do anything for Orton. And then Orton helps him up and dusts him off. He's kind of like, hey, you know, good on you for coming out. And he's like, okay, he's giving him a little rub. That's okay. And then he hits an RKO again on him. At that point, you keep doing it. It becomes a Family Guy bit where he like RKOs him like five or six more times. You know, like maybe he leaves the ring and comes back in and does it. Or like Hendry gets to the ramp and he shows up and like just keeps and just, you know, keeps doing it. Then it's funny. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this doesn't do anything for anybody. I think it could have been way more competitive by being a little longer and giving Joe some more and not making him look so stupid twice in a row. So half a star, maybe.
Yeah, I'm with you on the star rating. I hated this. I like Joe Hendry, and you know, friend of mine, you know, former colleague of ours, Tony Farinella, is a big Joe Hendry fan. You know, he was texting me that he was glad it wasn't a squash. To me, this was a squash.
That's totally a squash.
You know, and I like you. And Joe Hendry was on some podcast or doing an interview where he, you know, to him and I'm sure the company as well, it's like such this huge honor to be beaten by Randy Orton, and you know, it might be an honor to be beaten by Randy Orton, but not in 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
No.
And not when you were, and especially not that time when you were the TNA heavyweight champion. What sort of partnership is this? People, like, they had partnerships with other companies. Like, I don't know what the partnership is here, but like, to me, it's certainly not in TNA's favor.
Yeah.
Their heavyweight champion is being made to look like a joke. And, you know, Joe Hendry, to his credit, is putting on a happy face with this and saying that it was a great honor and all this kind of stuff. I thought that it hurt him greatly, and it didn't do a damn thing for Orton. More on Orton later. I'm with you on the star rating for this. So the next match, Logan Paul against AJ Styles, 17 minutes and 50 seconds. I gave this 2.5 stars. I didn't like it. I don't like Logan Paul. I don't like that they're trying to shove him down our throats as like, oh, you know, the guy that we love to hate type thing. I don't like him as a human being. And I think that AJ Styles is so good and can pretty much do anything, but I think he deserved a little bit better here. And, you know, the storyline involving Karrion Kross got a little bit interesting in that Karrion Kross wanted him to cheat to win and all that. I said to the guys, to Leonard and friend of the show, Ronnie, that I think AJ Styles is close to being done. And, you know, he's at the point now where I think he's just kind of, you know, this is what the company wants me to do. I'm going to do as best I can to fulfill that task because I think he's that type of human being. But this match, I didn't like the constant selfie thing. I didn't like the constant playing to the crowd. I thought that it went too long. So that's why I went 2.5. Leonard?
I tuned out. Like, it started, and then I was like, oh, I need to check a couple things on my phone. And then, like, Paul won. I was like, what happened? Right. Like, it completely lost me, completely tuned out on it. So I don't have really a whole lot to say other than, yeah, I mean, I know you're supposed to love to hate Paul. I just don't like the shtick at all. I did really like the Karrion Kross promo, and I agree with him. Karrion Kross has been working for, what, more than 10 years, and Paul wanders in off the street and is treated better than he's ever been treated.
Right.
So I think that's a great – and I love that he – one thing I didn't love, I hated about that promo, is calling AJ Styles Allen. That is the cheapest, dumbest thing you can do. I'm going to use somebody's real name because it's real. You idiot. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's happened before. You know, CM Punk used to do that.
I know he used to do it too. That's why I always like to call him Charles Montgomery Punk.
So, yeah, no, I did like that Karrion Kross promo.
But yeah, the promo Raw was really, really good and was the best thing that came out of this.
So let's go on to the next match, which is for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. Lyra, Valkyria, and a mystery opponent since Bayley was taken out against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. And I'm going to mention very quickly at this point of the night, I was watching both nights with my daughter, and they just happened to be on spring break. So I was actually able to show her night two because she was able to stay up to watch it,
Yeah,
which is unusual
for
because it's a
school.
Sunday before school. And she was not enjoying night two up until this point. She was very excited that Becky Lynch came out and was announced as the tag team partner. This match went 8 minutes and 40 seconds. And Becky and Lyra Valkyria won. Leonard, what'd you think?
This is all about Becky's return. I think this is a what I bet you Charlotte Flair was steamed because why do they cheer for Becky? Because Becky's return was exactly the reaction they wanted out of her. The crowd loved to see her. This was just as long as it needed to be to get her over and not make the other team look bad. I definitely think the her and Valkyrie, I never know how to say her name, was the right call here to win. I mean, I don't think they need women's tag belts anyway. But yeah, this was a good enough match with the centerpiece being Becky's return and how good she looked. So yeah, I liked it. I don't know what kind of star rating I would give. I know a lot of people seem to be high on this, but I wouldn't go over 3 stars. I would maybe go 2 3/4.
I went 2 on it. I didn't really
Okay,
care.
you went a lot lower than me. I almost said 2.5. I thought you were going to be higher.
I like Liv Morgan. Lyra Valkyria is okay. I think there's a lot of female talent that kind of have the same attitude and characteristics as she does. But this to me was very anticlimactic. And what made it worse for me, I was like, okay, you're going for the pop. Becky and her win. What do they do the next night? And this is again, like I'm gonna mention my daughter. So one of the matches was the WrestleMania rematch for the WWE Women's Tag Titles, and my daughter came in and she's like, "Oh, let me know who wins." And I was like, "Don't worry, sweetie. They're not going to be so dumb as to take the titles right back off of Becky and Lyra Valkyria." Well, sure enough, they did it. They did that right away. They take them back off of her, and Becky turns heel on her. And so, I was explaining it to my daughter, and she's like, "Well, maybe it makes sense, Daddy, because Becky Lynch is not a tag wrestler," and blah blah blah. And I was like, "You know what? That actually does make sense." But to me, this whole thing was then pointless, other
Yeah,
than
it was just for the pop for the night, and now we reset.
exactly. And that, I get it from a business standpoint, but it's like to me, it's like then you just look back at this whole thing as just unnecessary filler. But in any event, the main event, the reason that I'm sure a lot of people were watching this, Cody Rhodes, the undisputed WWE champion, defending his title against John Cena, 21 minutes and 40 seconds. And this was not how I expected this to go.
It was dog crap. It was my least favorite match of the two nights.
Was not good at all. I'm star rating, I probably couldn't say that, but in terms of emotion and all that, I hated it. I thought that this was exactly what you would hope a match between John Cena and Cody Rhodes wouldn't be. And I'm not even talking about the end yet. We'll get there. But like the match itself, I didn't think they had chemistry, and
No.
I think that that showed. And John Cena was never that great in the ring, unless he worked with somebody who could work with him. And I think that he's still very much a little rough around the edges, because he's not there full time. I get that. But the ending to this match to me was so unbelievably bad. Everybody's expecting the same thing. Other people have ranted about this. Everybody's expecting The Rock because that's who started this storyline, was
Right.
The Rock. And he didn't show up, but who shows up instead? Travis Scott. And Travis Scott takes 2 years to get to the ring. And you could see the guys in the ring like having to wait for him to strut down the belt that he was given and all this kind of stuff. And it was just so bad. And what makes this such a horrible thing is the fact that John Cena just broke Ric Flair's record.
Yes, with this match.
And that is, to wrestling fans, a big deal. And the fact that it happened in this way is unfortunate for pretty much all involved, in my opinion. And, you know, another the Busted Open radio show talked about how this really takes everything that they've done with Cody Rhodes and throws it right out the window, which is true. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, I went like a star and a half here.
And you don't seem happy about that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, even before the Travis Scott stuff, it was the type of match I hate where it was like, do a move, walk around, do a move, walk around, because they didn't know what to do with each other. Nothing really worked up until the point. I knew there was going to be a ref bump. Ref gets bumped. So Cody can get the 10 count with no one there. And then I'm like, well, where's Charles Robinson at? How many times have we seen him sprint to the ring?
Right.
When a ref gets bumped and nobody came down, nobody cared. And then Travis Scott comes and he whips the referee, Chad Patton, out of the ring. How's that not a disqualification? Chad Patton knows what happened.
Right.
He sees Travis Scott pull him out. He's on the floor. He looks at Travis Scott. He knows what happened. How's that not a DQ? I don't get that either. You know, this was just the worst booking and the worst combination of two guys. You know, I echo everything you said. It was just, I'll think Cena was going to win. I think Cena should have the belt back. I think you can tell a lot with that story, but not like this.
Yeah. And funny enough, I saw somebody posted on Twitter. I assume this was at the merchandise area for WrestleMania, a shirt that said, finally, The Rock has come back to Las Vegas, which I just think is hilarious now.
Yes.
If he was there, he didn't come out at all. So yeah, I mean, this was disappointing to me. And, you know, you said that, you know, they could do a lot with John Cena in this role. And, you know, I kind of did expect him to win, but I thought, where are they going to go after this? You know, the obvious is like a Cody Rhodes rematch, right?
Right.
Nope. That's not what they're going to do. And you know what? I'm sure Cody Rhodes wanted to take some time off. He, you know,
sure. He deserves that.
That happens a lot after WrestleMania. I get it. Mm-hmm. But what do? They go with Randy fucking Orton.
Orton and Cena, this is what, like the fourth time they would have feuded or something? I mean, it seems like it should be more than that.
This is the millionth match.
Millionth. The actual millionth one.
You can look online. Somebody at one point years ago posted a screenshot of like all the times they had matches. And it's so many. So many.
I was saying matches. I was saying feuds.
Oh, well, yeah. Might be. That's probably a small number. But like they've had every match under the sun. Every single match under the sun. Iron Man. Last Man Standing. You name it. They've had it. And yes, they've not feuded with Cena as the heel. Who cares? Go away. Like, this is so stupid to me. So stupid. So, like, I come out of this. I will merge into my final thoughts here.
Go ahead.
I come out of this, like, and having watched Raw, which I usually don't do, but I had it. There's a bunch of stuff going on in the house, so I was like, let me just keep Raw on. That way I can add some context to some of the things for this. Mm-hmm. And nothing has me thinking to myself, I need to keep watching because I want to find out what happens next. I don't care what happens between Randy Orton and John Cena. I just don't. I've never thought that they had a really great chemistry together. I never have. To me, this WrestleMania had some solid matches. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't know that any of them, and this is where Leonard might disagree with me because he really liked the triple threat, but I don't know that any of them really came off to me as like, holy shit, wow, like that was great. There were some good matches on it, but I thought that this was a very anticlimactic WrestleMania. I thought that a lot of talent came out of this like in basically either the same position they were before, if not worse. And I came out of it thinking to myself, if I can predict most of these matches, including how some of them ended, to me, that's a problem. I am a 40-something average dude sitting on my couch. And I realize you're not supposed to be super critical of the product, but like, come on. So I had a lot of issues with it. Leonard.
All right. First, you only had one AEW comparison, so good on you for that. And I would echo a lot of what you said. I do think that the triple threat was great. I do think that's the only match that people might be talking about years to come, or people would revisit in years to come. I don't think anything was really actively bad outside of the night two main event. Even the Orton Hendry thing, I think, served a purpose that it wanted to serve. That's fine. So everything else was just middling. And I agree with you. Everything was kind of predictable. Everything was in that WWE template. And it certainly wasn't I did not watch Raw, and it's nothing that would make me want to come back next week. So with that being said, to wrap up as we've been doing lately, I've got two cards that we'll go through real quick from World Wrestling Federation Attitude and Review Game 3rd Edition. So if you haven't been seeing this at the end of shows, we've been answering these questions from this game I picked up from a thrift store. There's 5 questions on the card. We're doing the 3 through 5, which are the harder ones that aren't multiple choice. So, Chad, who was the Federation's second light heavyweight title holder?
The second?
Second light heavyweight. So that would have been like, we're talking Attitude Era, late 90s.
Ooh. I know who won it first. I'm trying to think. Wasn't it Taka Michinoku?
I don't know. That's not on here, but okay.
He is not my answer for this.
Okay, but who would beat him?
Oh, man. Brian Christopher?
It was Christian.
Wow. Okay. I was way off. I would not have guessed that at all.
Okay. Edge, Christian, and Gangrel comprise what group?
The Brood.
That is correct. And then, what color was Taka Michinoku's light heavyweight belt? What color was his belt?
Was it yellow or blue?
It was red. Okay. I would have probably went with blue. So here's my card. What amount of money was on the line in the Andre the Giant Big John Studd Body Slam Challenge at WrestleMania 1? $25,000. What former superstar was the first wrestler profiled on A&E's biography? I don't know for a fact, but I would guess Andre the Giant. Who challenged Bruno Sammartino in the first Federation title match held in a foreign country?
Joe Hendry.
It was Joe Hendry? It was in Sweden and France and all that. Well, it's probably Japan. I'm going to guess this was in Japan because they had a working relationship with Japan. And they did stuff with Inoki. I'm going to guess Inoki.
All right.
So, it was $15,000, not $25,000. So I was wrong on that. That was $25,000. $15,000. Andre the Giant was the first guy for that. And then Giant Baba.
Okay.
Was the guy who challenged. So I was right, and it was Japan.
Yes. Yeah.
But not the guy. Celebrity of the Week was Lita. And your celebrity was Rhino. I forgot to show you that. But those are the cards for the week.
All right. Well, thank you for those. Let us know what you thought about WrestleMania, whether you agree or disagree, what your favorite match of the night was, your general thoughts about what happened at Raw, any of that. But we thank you for tuning in. Please hit the like button on this video. Subscribe to our content. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts as well. We have lots of other videos. Check them out. For Leonard, my name is Chad, and we will see you next time.